With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, welcome to Horse Hour. I'm Amy Frost. Our guest today is Harriet Morris-Bomber. Harriet's an eventer. She's represented Great Britain on several occasions, and she's won team bronze at the CIC two-star European Championships. On top of her competing, Harriet's a coach. So not only does she share her journey, but she gives us some advice on what to look for if you're looking for an eventing coach. And to add to that, she's on her huge journey, and that is to the Paris Olympics in 2024. Harriet's going to share her experience so far, along with some advice on the Horse Hour podcast. Welcome to the Horse Hour podcast. My lovely guest today is Harriet Morris-Bomber. In 2005, Harriet represented Great Britain in the junior CCI One Star in Ireland, where she finished 11th. She was young in those days. She only started riding at 11, but the year after, she finished 6th individually. Move on to 2009. Harriet completed her first three-star at Bramham International and won team bronze at the CIC two-star European Championships in Hungary. Then in 2015, she was voted runner-up in the KBIS Instructor of the Year. Harriet, how are you?
I'm really well, thank you. I'm really well.
This is so exciting. Already, you've had a really eventful career. And may I ask how young you are?
Yeah, I'm 28.
Yeah, so you kind of put us to shame a little bit, really, don't you?
Oh, I'm not sure about that.
I mean, if someone said to me, right, I need you to focus on this amazing, huge, biggest, one of the biggest events in the whole world in 2020, it's the Tokyo Olympic Games, I'd say you're crazy because, one, it's so far ahead. How can you even think about planning for that?
Well, I suppose you have to plan far ahead, because then you have to work backwards and see what you need to be doing right now in order to start the process to get there. So everything's about planning ahead and then working backwards from that to make sure you're on target.
Oh, well, that makes sense. Yeah, I can see that. But it still feels like a long way away, doesn't it? So have you been dreaming of this since you first started riding at 11?
Oh, absolutely. Well, yeah, no, I've been riding since I was probably 4. And I first started eventing when I was 11, which actually now, you're actually not allowed to do that now. It's against the rules. You have to be, I think, 14 before you're allowed to compete. So they've changed the rules.
I'm not surprised. Your mum, either she, you know, she had all this hope and faith in you, or she was just crazy and went, yeah, like I remember the old days, you know, they'd just say, come on, get on with it, you'll be fine. You fall off, you get back on. And I miss a little bit of that now in our children, because we do protect them a lot. But would you let your 11-year-old, if you had an 11-year-old, would you let them go eventing now?
No, I look at the Pony Club kids that are 11 that I teach and think, holy moly, what was mum thinking?
But isn't it great? Because it means that you've achieved so much so young.
Oh, yeah. No, I think it's fantastic. And I've never, ever wanted to do anything else. From being 4, when I first went to school, I thought it was bizarre that nobody else had horses at the bottom of the garden and nobody else wanted to ride. And so this is all what I've wanted to do my whole life has been focused on the horses and competing and eventing, I suppose. So yes, it's an all-consuming passion, really, that takes over.
It is. I say this a lot. It's in our blood. We're addicted to it. It's like a drug addiction, isn't it?
Yeah, but a healthy one.
Yeah, that's true. Quite often, when you go through your teenage years, you get to 15, and some people veer off away from horses because they go to, you know, there's boys and there's life and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Did you find that stage in your life?
A lot of my friends at school, what were like, why aren't you coming out this weekend? Why aren't you doing this? And it's quite simple. I don't want to, and I want to do the horses, and I want to compete, and that's what I want. It was quite easy for me because I wanted to do the horses. It wasn't like someone was twisting my arm to do it. A lot of the people that I competed with at that age were very serious as well, so they've gone on to do big and exciting things, and I certainly didn't want to feel like I was a step behind them. I wanted to be, you know, better than them. So it's quite easy for me because that is what I wanted to do. I suppose if you had a bit of doubt, or you were doing it because you sort of felt you needed to, that would be the time when other things would take priorities. But there was only one priority in my life, and that was horses and competing.
Because even that's interesting in itself, because, you know, not many 15, 16 year olds have that much drive to know that not only do they want to have horses and ride every weekend and enjoy it, they also want to professionally compete.
Yeah, but then again, you see, from being 12, I've competed with the best in the country for the top 4, 5, 6 spots. So when you're around people like that all the time, week in, week out, and they maybe do better than you one weekend, and then you might do a bit better than them the next weekend, that in itself drives you to stay with them. So yes, okay, the average 15, 16 year old maybe hasn't got that sort of, but when you're with the elite, they're all like that. So you're not different, you're the same.
So it definitely makes a difference then how you're nurtured and your surroundings. Yeah. And the support that you
absolutely
have.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I'm sure it's the same in tennis or football. If you're spotted at a young age and you're around the best in your age category, then I'm sure everybody is just as driven and just as focused. You're not the abnormal one. You'd be abnormal if you were lazy and late to training and not putting in the hours. You'd be the abnormal one.
And doesn't that give you so much, you know, the responsibility, and it teaches you so much as a youngster, doesn't it?
Yeah,
you
can take absolutely. Two. Yeah, and that's what Mum always said. I think that's how she justified it to Dad, spending all the money and time. She said it's life skills. We're investing in life skills.
Well, you certainly don't learn that at school. I know we talk a lot about mucking it
out.
No,
you don't.
But, they, you know, they don't teach you how to pay bills. They don't teach you how to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and your work ethic and how to negotiate and sell.
Yes, exactly. And how to deal with people and difficult situations and how to get through adversity. Yeah, exactly. All of that is not applicable in a classroom.
So your mum then, how involved is she? Is she an equestrian? Does she own horses?
Yeah, she competed a little bit, and that's how I got into the eventing. She had a horse and competed as a hobby. She's actually a financial advisor, so ironically, she's got a daughter that probably makes the worst decisions and spends money on things that, you know, could die tomorrow. But but in her professional life, she's advising people to be very safe and sensible with their money. And then if I say, I think there's this horse I want to buy, yeah, that's great. So she's very involved when we're competing, and on a day-to-day basis she's obviously working, but we all mum and dad both work at home here, and I obviously have the yard at home, so we're all here, but we run our separate businesses. And then at a weekend when we're competing, or I do a lot of teaching, then they are involved, and certainly in the decision making of buying horses, selling horses, if I have situations I need to chat through, they're very, very involved.
And what's your dad like then? Does he run his own business?
Yes, he does. Yeah, he's very good on the maths, which I am not. So if there's a maths problem or
like how expensive it is
out,
and what the VAT is on it, then you're just like, Dad.
Yeah, Dad, please do this. Yeah.
So what is his business? I guess it's not equestrian.
It's in the racing industry, actually, so it's sort of equestrian based. Yeah.
Okay, so that's good, because you've got two people that understand your sport, understand the passion and the enthusiasm and the dedication that it takes, and
absolutely
also brave enough to say, there you go, Harriet, off you go, come on, you've got to pick yourself up, to give you that independence to really be successful.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, Yeah, definitely.
Can I come and live with you, please?
Oh, yeah, it's cool. Yeah, it's very cool. I often say we should have cameras here. There's stuff that goes on, the shenanigans that go on here.
No, you'd make good like Gogglebox.
Yes, Gogglebox, or like you know, the Osbournes on Channel 4 or something. You know, like, yeah, we'd make great with compulsive viewing.
We should definitely do that. Gogglebox at Harriet's. That would be amazing.
Yeah.
Well, now you've built up this amazing property, amazing facilities. That I was looking at photos because I'm a little bit stalkerish, and I wanted to see your horses, and you know, I like to get know a little bit about my guests before they come onto the podcast.
Yeah.
And oh my goodness, you're in Yorkshire in this beautiful place called Granary Hill, with the most phenomenal facilities. So can you explain to us how you built this home for your horses?
So I think we moved here just under 20 years ago, and it was a sort of a derelict farm. And originally we lived in the farmhouse, and then the horses were stabled in the barn. And then we sold the farmhouse, and now we live in the barn, and we've built new stables. And originally it was just mum with a horse and me with a pony. And now it's all consuming. There's 22 boxes outside, an arena with floodlights, cross-country facilities, great hacking, 12 acres of, you know, great post-rail fields, sandy lands, there's no mud.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And like, we've been cross country this morning, and a lady said, you know, are you sure the field's not too wet? And it's perfect. We can go all winter on the field. So it's fantastic. And we keep adding to it and improving it. And I have big plans for a big water complex. That's my next project.
That would be awesome. What, where people can bring their horses down to you and have a go in the water?
Yes, so we've got pretty much everything else in the cross-country course. We've got ditches and steps and banks and things, but no water jump. So that would be the next.
Oh, you're talking about a jump. You're not talking about like exercising, you know, with the machine where they stand on the treadmill.
No,
you're talking about
no.
Oh my gosh, get a lake. Can you just dig a lake and then you can go swimming with your horses?
Well, I don't think we've got room for a lake, but we've certainly got. There's quite a lot of streams and water courses around, so we can sort of tap into those, hopefully.
Mm. So amateur poor people like me that have nothing.
I'm poor as well. Yeah, I have no money.
all equestrians are, I think, because we spend. I often say I choose beans on toast and to feed my horse sometimes rather than, you know, never buy anything for me. So basically, I've always wanted to go swimming with my horse, and I know that you can go down to the beach and the sea, and you know, for people that are amazing at riding, that's super cool because they can jump the waves.
Yeah.
For people like me, we wouldn't even get anywhere near the water. So there's a man down the road that owns a lake, and normally you can go water skiing on it in the summer. So I thought, in the winter it's not being used. So I gave him 20 quid and he let us go swimming in the lake.
Oh, wow. Okay.
How cool is that? So that's the next. It was so good there. Why, is that dangerous?
I don't know. I wouldn't fancy taking my beast swimming. But if they swam off without me, I'd get left behind.
No, you're on them. I was on him.
Oh, I'm not sure about that. I'll stick to riding in the arena, I think.
No, Harriet, you've got to do it. Put it on the bucket list. It's the most phenomenal experience. There's a place down in Cornwall where you can go where they take you swimming with the horses. Have you actually never swum with horses?
No, but I tell you, Sultan, who I did Bramham on, he was born on this farm in Portugal where they sort of breed all the horses, and it's very, very rural. And there's seven brothers. None of the girls in Portugal ride. Only the boys that ride. And the boys swim out. So with the horses, they're all sort of feral and free range. And they live on an estuary. And the horses, the mares, when they're about to have their foals, swim out to the island in the middle of the estuary. And the boys swim with them. And then when the foals are a few days old, they swim back. And I've seen the photos of them as a big herd. Seven brothers and like 25 horses all swimming across this. It's very sort of... it's very amazing.
It's magical, isn't it?
Magical, yeah, exactly.
Well, I was shocked. The first time I went swimming with horses, I was shocked at how quickly they pick it up. It's like a dog, you know, a dog on doggy paddle. They just pick it up really easily. And
yeah.
I felt like the Loch Ness Monster, because you kind of go up, you go up and down and up and down in this really slow motion kind of way. And it's almost like what I imagine sitting trot to be like in like, you know, minus 15 slow motion. It's really amazing. Yeah. Highly, highly recommend, if you get a chance, take them down there, because it's really good exercise for them as well. Or you can come down to my local guy down the road, give him 20 quid and you can have a go down here. Enough about me. Tell me, I'd love to know more about you, Harriet. You know, so far you've had a phenomenal career. It can't all have been easy though. There must have been some times that have been
tough.
Oh,
not at all. Yeah, but there's been very hard times. When I've been really, really close to being on the team, and I think I was first reserve a couple of years, and then I was third reserve 1 year, and then that, you know, when you're very, very close, you're so close but not quite, you know, and everybody else has got their bloody Union Jacks plastered all over them, and everybody else is going off, and you're not, because you're just stuck at home because you're first reserve. You're like, nearly, try again next time, honey. So that's tough.
And weren't you selected one of your horses was poorly?
Yes, so I was selected in 2006 after I'd been to Switzerland and got placed in Switzerland. I was then selected for the actual European Championships, and then my horse went lame, so that was the end of that journey. And I had a horse on the list for London Olympics. So that was quite amazing. Obviously, it was quite a long list because there were lots of people that they had in their sights. Mm. They had a pathway program where they were looking at, they were doing the thing where they look back and see 4 years before Sydney, what were those people doing? And 4 years before Athens, what were those people doing? And they did that for London. So they said, okay, London's 4 years away. Where are those people now that in 4 years could be peaking at the right time? Mm. So it was about, I was on that pathway program for about two of the 4 years. And then my horse got an injury. So that was the end of that. But it was a fun experience, massive learning curve, and a huge, massive experience to be part of, and a huge privilege. So, and then in the last couple of years, I've been very short on horsepower. I've bought some horses that haven't worked out. I've had horses that, through no fault of their own, just really haven't got what it takes. Mm. And that's been very tough when you have a cumulative sort of, one horse doesn't make it, then the next one doesn't make it, and the next one. And when you get to sort of horse four, and you think, really, should I be, am I, is someone trying to tell me something? Should I really not be doing this? And that's very tough to keep going through the adversity when it's sort of brick wall after brick wall. But then I've got through all of that. I've put together my syndicate, and they've bought some fantastic horses for me, and now it's all eyes forward again now.
How do you get through that tough time? You know, we all have times in business where we think we want to chuck it all in, really, and say, well, why am I carrying on with this? How did you mentally get through that?
Well, I didn't know what else I wanted to do. There was nothing else I wanted to do. And I actually went and interviewed for William Fox Pitt for a job there, because I thought, if I have no horses here, and I interviewed with him, and then I realised, and I went through a few different interviews with different yards, and I realised actually what I was giving up at home, and all I needed was a few horses. Mm. And there were plenty of people that were saying, oh, Harriet, you know, it'd be such a shame if you weren't in Yorkshire, and oh, we'd really miss you, and where would we go for our lessons? And I was like, So I realised that actually so many people were supportive. Mm. When it feels like the world's against you, actually I realised the support I did have. And a lot of those people have now come on board with the syndicate and are now financially and physically and mentally and everything. They are part of the team. They're supporting me in every way. So so I suppose you've got to just see what you have got rather than what you haven't got.
That's really lovely and nice that they did put their money where their mouth is when they, you know, they said that they'd support you, and they actually are. And sometimes everyone needs a little bit of a boost sometimes, just a bit of a confidence to say, no, you are doing really well. Just keep going. You will get there. You'll be okay.
Yes, exactly. Just keep going. Yeah, that's right. I think it is that just keep going.
Yeah, because we've got no choice.
Yeah, I wasn't born to be a stockbroker.
So how do you plan then for Tokyo 2020? Is it, are you in the sights of the selectors?
No, is the simple answer to that. No, and in fairness, when I put everything together and Tokyo was the target, I was probably looking at buying horses that were much further on than what I actually ended up with. So I was looking for a horse that was probably near enough already that 2-star or 3-star. Mm. And we ended up buying horses that had never evented before. So although, yeah, that was the aim, we're probably too far off the pace now in terms of the horses' experience. So we're probably looking more towards Paris 2024, which is 6 years, which is far more achievable. And I've got 3 horses now. And literally, we've just bought another one to add to the syndicate. So with 3 horses, you would hope that of the 3, you know, one at least might come through to go to that level.
Mm.
And if the others don't, they could be sort of upcycled and replaced with something else. How do I plan? Well, I suppose the first thing you've got to do is get qualified. You've got to get qualified back, be competitive at 3-star level and 4-star. So that in itself is going to be a journey. And then there is a long way to go. There's no two ways about it. But you've got to aim for something. You've got to have some aim. And along the way, there will be other exciting teams, like the 2-star team that I did in 2009, the CIC 2-star team. That is a very, very realistic option in the next couple of years. That will be a stepping stone on the way to say Paris or something like that.
Well, you won team bronze and that was the European Championships, which is incredible. Yes. But don't you have different horses now from when you had in 2009? So will it be a whole different ball game altogether?
Yes, it will totally be. And on these horses that I've got now are unproven, whereas all the horses I've ridden in the past have had previous experience and it was just a partnership that was new. Whereas it will be for me the first time that I will have taken horses from the beginning all the way through the journey, which will be really exciting for me, rather than me sort of taking over from somebody else. I've get to do the whole, put the whole, you know, from the very first pencil lines, I get to put everything on, not just the colour on the canvas at the end.
Oh, but that's so lovely. I guess you've learned from the experience of riding the other horses that have done a little bit before.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, massively.
And how has that helped you?
I know what it is that we're looking for. I know what a really, really good horse feels like, how they perform, their strengths and weaknesses, and what weaknesses can be worked on and what weaknesses just physically will stop them performing. So that's really exciting. I know what we're looking for. I know that the ingredients that it takes. Having ridden at that level, I know what's expected of me. I know the performance level that's expected, the pressure mentally, emotionally, everything. I know what's coming.
Mm. How do you deal with that pressure when you're trying to run a business at the same time, though? I mean, it's hard enough doing one, let alone both.
I don't really notice it because I wouldn't want to be doing anything else. I couldn't imagine doing anything else. I love it.
Aww.
So it's not stressful particularly, because although it might be pressure, it's something you want to do. It's something that you really enjoy doing. You're passionate about. So it's not a stressful, it's not a negative stress. It's you know, passion, excitement, pressure.
It's a kick up the bum stress. It keeps you, you know, makes you, gives you a target.
Yeah. Keeps you sharp.
Because you're a coach as well, does that help you then with your own career? And I know that sounds like a really crazy question, but in any industry, if you want to be really good and the best, you've got to stay educated. You have to be looking at your own performance as well. So I'm wondering if the people that you teach give you a push as well to make sure that you're always there ahead of the game.
No, it does. When I turn up to a competition and they're there as well, I think, bloody hell, Harriet, but what are you getting? You can't turn it like a Muppet today. You've got to practice what you preach. So, yes, I suppose because I'm constantly analysing them and how to help them and how they're riding, it does make me want to, because I video everything for lessons, competitions, sometimes riding at home, I video everything. So it does give me the ability to critique myself as I do other people. And your eye gets trained to just try and work out, obviously in real time, when you're watching it with your eyes on the ground, in real time, it's actually quite hard. It's harder. When you watch a video, you can repeat it, stop it, pause it, and all of that. So it's actually harder to help and critique and fix things in real time than it is in when I'm watching the video of myself.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
True. Do you think you could be an instructor without being able to ride at that level?
No.
That's a tricky one, isn't it? Because
no, not at all.
It's been 2 years now I've been doing this podcast, and I've learned a lot from so many guests like yourself. And I look at riders and I think, oh, well, if you could just tweak this and you could just tweak that. And I thought maybe I could be an instructor, but there's absolutely no way I could ride at that level myself.
Well, I think you definitely develop an eye. Mum and Dad, from watching all the years of watching lessons, watching me ride, you can see things. Definitely, I'm not saying you can't see things from the floor, but to then know how to change it and what to change and then what to do to fix it, that comes from experience.
Well, so, you'll be pleased to know I won't be an instructor or a coach, because I know that I'd be a pretty rubbish one. But I guess my point is that, you know, I'd have loads of empathy and I'd end up saying, oh, give the horse a break now. He's worked really hard. But I guess my point is coaches are... I'm quite passionate about coaches, and I'm really passionate on qualified coaches that enhance their own education, are constantly going back and getting retrained and learning new things and the way that the industry changes. And
you better not talk to me then. I haven't got one qualification to my name.
No, that's really interesting. No. What, nothing?
Yeah. Nothing. No.
So, no. Okay. What? Not
you?
So
I don't know how you deal with that.
No. That's really interesting to know, because finally you can give me the other view, because I'm only going on people that are going to shoddy instructors that are not insured, not qualified, don't know what they're doing, don't have any experience. And from an outsider, I look at that and say, well, there are these youngsters and adults as well, you know, in the horse industry the first time, that are being put at risk. You know, they're being put in with horses, there's five horses in there at the same time, they're not being partnered with the right horse, and it's like health and safety nightmare and dangerous situation for kids, but also it's not giving them a good basis to start their equestrian life
so that's in a riding school situation, which is quite different. And if you're teaching somebody to ride and you are providing them with a horse as well, I totally agree. There needs to be some structure to that. But when I see people teach that aren't qualified, in terms of because they've just competed themselves, they're almost more qualified than someone that's learnt it in a book. It frustrates me a lot at grassroots levels. I see a lot of instructors, or I don't even call them coaches because they're not. They're just instructors that have learnt it in a book, have passed a load of exams, call themselves this, that and the other, and they haven't got a clue. They've never competed to any sort of level. And I think they're dangerous because they're teaching children, particularly, I won't specify, but they're teaching, sometimes I use the analogy that they are strapping the kid into the front seat of the car without a seatbelt on. It's that dangerous what they're telling children to do. And adults, there's people that come to me for lessons that have had terrible falls because of poor instruction that they've been given based on what it says in a book or how they've been taught to teach, as opposed to actual experience.
So maybe then the key is a bit of both, some experience along
Definitely.
With, you know, the theory and the education as well. I am interested to know, though, if there's no law that says that you have to be qualified, that, you know, you've only really got the BHS accredited, you could be a BHS accredited coach. And is there even that at your level?
Yes, there's actually more. There's the UKCC qualifications now. So there is the BHS thing, but also there is a discipline specific coaching system for dressage, show jumping, eventing, and it's the UK coaching certificate, UKCC, and I think that is replacing the old BHS system. It's much more of a coach, rather than you're trying to teach someone to ride. It's like you say about coaching and trying to get the best out of people and goal setting, and much more of an all-round strategy. And then there's also the British Eventing accredited coaching thing as well. So there are other options than just the BHS. So yeah, and that is something that I am looking at doing. I missed the slot in January. There was an intake for the UKCC thing, and I missed the slot on that one. Then when it comes around again in January this time, I will sort of join in. But as far as I see it, it's a paper exercise to tick a box to say that you are, because I feel like when you asked me then and I said, well, I haven't got anything, I feel like I should have something on paper to back up what I'm doing.
Do you know, I don't think it's for you, Harriet, if I'm honest. I mean, your experience speaks for itself. In the hairdressing world, if you've been a hairdresser for 30 years, you're a master stylist. You know, there's nothing to say, there's no qualification that goes with that. It's a reward for the experience and the time that you've put into the industry. And I think there should be the same level of that, almost like an honorary degree. You know,
it's
this is your experience, this is what you've brought to the industry, this is your life. And 2005 Great Britain, 2009 Bramham Team Bronze European Championships, you know, 2015 Instructor of the Year runner-up, all those things show that that's your qualification. For people, So I don't judge you at all for not having qualifications, because I'd think, well, why should you? You've got, why would you? When are you going to have time to go and sit and do theory lessons? You've been out competing and training horses. But there's two questions that I have. The first is for people that are looking for instructors. We need to have something to save these people and help them. So we need some sort of regulations. So if somebody could give you, I'll make up a horse hour one, as long as everyone sticks to it and it's regulated, it's fine. But, you know, that's an honorary coaching certificate to say that technically you are qualified. But not everybody's going to be able to go to you, Harriet. Some people are going to go to local coaches that don't have any, that say, oh, I rode a da, 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 and I did this. But it's not enough for that coaching certificate. They need qualifications to back it up. So I guess the qualifications are to protect those people. Also to protect you. My second question is, how do you get insured for it? Like, if there's no qualification to go with it, how can you be insured?
I am insured. I'm insured with Shearwater as a freelance instructor, and they insure me to teach here and at other venues. And say if I wanted to get on a horse and demonstrate, then I'm insured to do that. And as long as I don't exceed, I think it's however many hours per week, that's absolutely fine. And they know that I haven't got any qualifications, and they're happy with that.
But they have your experience.
I guess so. They didn't ask me what I'd done.
Really?
No. So you can get insurance as a freelance. You can.
Do they sponsor you?
No.
So, no, this is key. You know, I don't want you to feel that I'm hounding you with questions. It's because I'm so fascinated with it. So we just clear it up. They're not a sponsor. You just phone them up and you've got phone ransom deals and that's who you got. You got Shearwater to insure you. They didn't ask for any qualifications. They didn't ask for your history. No. So I've been blabbing on for ages saying, you know, you should have an instructor that's insured. Because technically you should. I think every instructor should absolutely. To protect themselves as well.
Yeah.
But that's not enough to show that you're good enough to be doing that job.
No, but I don't know who these people are that are teaching that haven't got qualifications, that haven't got insurance, that are doing this terrible job, because I see plenty of people that have got qualifications that are so terrible. You know, I want to go over and say something to them. So to me, I don't see that as the problem. I do not see the fact that they haven't got qualifications as the problem, because plenty of people with all the certificates under the sun that definitely should not be teaching people.
So how do we stop it?
I've no idea. I've no idea.
Oh, it's hard, isn't it? I guess as a wannabe rider, we've just got to look at all our options in our local area and go on recommendations. And if you had a student, because, you know, you could, I really don't want to hound you. You know, I hope you're not offended in any way, are you, Harriet?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, not at all.
What would you expect customers to ask of you when they look at you being their coach?
I've no idea, and that is a very good question, because at the moment I'm trying to work out how I'm going to rank higher on Google, so that's a good question.
I don't mean just you, you know, it's not you personally, I guess, but as a coach, because I try and give tips of what people should look for in their coach, but I can only say that from a equestrian's point of view. I can't say it from a coach's point of view, so I need to make sure that what I say has both sides. So I'm keen to hear from a coach's perspective what you would say to potential students.
I suppose I would say, if you've got a good coach, if they are happy to explain why, and if you say, well, why is that, or if someone says, well, I don't understand, if they can't back that up and they can't explain themselves, then they clearly don't know what they've just heard the phrase and they're trotting it out again, or if they just do exercise after exercise with no relevance behind it, and how does that apply to your horse, I suppose. I don't know if that's quite what you're asking.
Yeah, no, it's brilliant. Any advice is great, because one of the hardest things, I think, is finding the right coach for you. And someone that can support you in your journey. And you're like counsellors to us, aren't you, really?
Absolutely. I feel like that sometimes. I think that is a really, really good question. I've never thought about it. You know, how do you find a good coach? And that, I think that's that could be an article somewhere. That could be a blog post, couldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
How to find a good coach.
Well, this is what I'm on the mission for, is to find some sort of guide as to how you find a good coach. A guide for wannabe students, and a guide for people that are thinking about being a coach as well. Because, you know, I maybe it's just my area. Maybe you guys are really lucky in Yorkshire, but where I'm from right now, you've got 16-year-old kids that are coaching kids. And it's painful to watch. And I'm trying so hard to not just go in there and grab those children out and say, what the hell are you doing? You cannot coach because, one, you have no experience, and you've got no qualifications, and you're not insured. And the scary thing is, I'm seeing this so much. But then on what you're saying as well, I also know riders. I've also seen instructors who have worked at some amazing places, and oh my god, they're shocking. Literally, again, painful to watch. And I feel, as somebody who's not a coach, I shouldn't be saying this, I shouldn't be judging, but I'm not judging, I'm just worrying about the students.
Yeah, and I think you're an observer and you have your own experience to draw on, and if you think that the situation is not correct, then yeah. And I think there is a lack of real useful structure in the terms of who can teach and who can advise and things like that. I think there should be some sort of hierarchy. So, okay, anybody could be a certain level and they call themselves an instructor. But, and a bit like with the BHS, there's like the fellowship of the BHS. And to be a fellow, you have to be like seriously, you know, amazing, which I agree with. All the fellows of the BHS are fantastic. But then you go down the rankings and I think the system falls apart. So I don't know. I think there should be some sort of competency in terms of what you can actually do when you do ride. But then again, some of the really, really good riders can't teach because it's so natural to them. It's so instinctive to them that they don't know what they're doing. They're doing everything subconsciously. Whereas some of the very best coaches are riders that are having to work to be as good as everybody else. Mm. So they're having to think through, they're having to process all the things that they're doing. They're literally processing the processes that they go through. Then they can repeat that to somebody else. Whereas some of them, they do 7 million different things at once and they don't realise they've done it. So they can't break it down.
Can you teach that though? Does that just come with riding and experience?
Teach that, so yes, because anything is practiced. Yes, okay, some people are born more practiced than others because it's more instinctive to them. But yeah, if you practice something, I truly, truly believe there's a book by Matthew Saeed called Bounce, and he starts talking about the world's best table tennis players, and there were quite a lot of them were from this small town somewhere, I can't remember, and it was because they had access to practicing. They were playing against each other, they were playing against the best because they were practicing against the best, therefore they become better, more access, and it's all about basically the more you practice the better you become. So yeah, and there's this sort of you're consciously aware of doing something, then you're consciously aware that you're not doing it correctly, mm-hmm. then you're consciously aware that you're doing it correctly, and then it becomes subconscious. So yes, there's I'm massively into my sports psychology and all of that. So
that's amazing. Because I'm constantly, I'm thinking now, right, well, I know exactly what I do. I'm sat there riding, I'm going right, head up, shoulders back, legs, hand, missed it. Yeah. Right, again, head up, leg, no, wrong leg, right leg. Yeah. And it's not quick enough, but no, that's amazing. So what was his book called? It's Matthew Saeed.
And it's called Bounce. Syed, so Saeed, I'm not quite sure, and it's called Bounce. That's really good. And there's a whole load of other books. There's one which is my favorite, I'm reading it at the moment. It's called Will It Make the Boat Go Faster? And it's about an Olympic rower, and he talks about I haven't got all the way through the book, so I don't know the whole thing, but he talks about the British rowing, and when you have the other teams were picking their best person and putting their best person in the boat or in the one on their own, then the two best in the two, and the British did it differently. They did it the opposite way around to everybody else, and basically the worst eight were all went in the boat together or something like that. I can't remember exactly. And it's really interesting how they were probably the worst eight rowers of you know, worst eight is slight exaggeration, but they were the worst of the best, if that made sense. Mm. But they won Olympic gold because they put in that bit more, and they had this phrase, will it make the boat go faster? So should they go to the opening ceremony at the Olympics, will that, if they stand on their feet for an extra 8 hours or and then get to bed, you know, 3 hours later than they should, will that make the boat go faster in the morning? No, they don't do it. So I apply that to everything now. Will eating that extra pile of, you know, chocolate make the boat go faster? No, it won't. So everything like that.
But will the apple? Will eating the apple make the boat go faster? Will
absolutely.
It will.
Yeah. 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 Exactly. And you know, will doing another 10 minutes on this horse make the boat go faster? Well, it might, because I could repeat this exercise again. Or no, actually, in this case, it won't make the boat go faster because this horse has run out of petrol. Or all those. You can apply it to everything. Everything. Like everything. So yeah. Will going for an extra lesson make the boat go faster? Will buying a new set of boots make the boat go faster? Well, it might do. Right, I'm doing it then.
The boots for us won't, but the boots for the horses will.
Well, that's what I was thinking of. I was thinking of the horses, obviously.
Oh, Harriet, yeah. It's been fascinating. Thank you for giving us homework as well. We appreciate that.
You're very welcome.
It's brilliant. Well, listen, I wish you the very, very best of luck for Paris 2024. And actually, 6 years, it's not that long away. You know, I've got a 10-year plan for my horse. We've gone behind 4 years, so we're still on the 10-year plan. So actually, 6 years isn't that far at all. And
there's a lot to be done.
I'm really looking forward to, you know, watching your journey and following you over the next 6 years. And
please
let us know. Let us know if you get on the long list how you do. And actually, maybe we should catch up next year. We should play this back this time next year.
Don't play it back.
And see what's happened and see how your year's been and if you ever did go swimming with horses.
That won't make the boat go faster.
You never know, it might. And we do have to give your sponsors a mention as well. Harriet's sponsored by Yorkshire Pet Portraits. They do beautiful portraits of your horses, your dogs. I've seen these. They're absolutely stunning. So that's Yorkshire Pet Portraits and North Yorkshire Saddles. I love the fact that you're keeping it all at home, Harriet. How can we follow you on Twitter and Facebook?
Facebook is HMB Equestrian and Twitter, I think, is the same. And I'm on Instagram as well with Harriet Morris Bournemouth. So, on any of those channels, you can find YouTube as well. I have a YouTube channel too.
And everything. And you mentioned earlier you do loads of videos, so definitely check those out.
Yes.
And Harriet, have an amazing Christmas and we will catch up soon.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. As always, there's a whole bunch of information and education on our website. If you just head to horsehour.co.uk, and just to make it more fun before Christmas, you can win a Sport of Kings watch. You actually get a choice of four watches. One is for women and three are for men, because, you know, we like to spoil our other halves when we get time. So we thought, well, why not treat them with a little watch? I'm sure you're really going to like these watches. So have a look at our Facebook page. It's at Horse Hour. The competition is also running on Twitter and on our website as well. So lots of opportunities for you to enter and possibly win a nice little present just before Christmas. So that's the Sport of Kings watch. Are you off to Olympia this week? I'm going to be there. I'd love to see you if you're going. If you're the other side of the pond, then I'm really sorry I can't see you there in person, but I will be doing some filming for you so you can still see what's going on at Olympia, because the FEI dressage is on the Wednesday. We get to see Carl Hester. I think he's doing a demonstration, and I'll try and get as much behind the scenes stuff as I can for you. But if you're there, take a photo and tag us in it at Horse Hour, hashtag Horse Hour, because I love to see what your experiences are like when you're at events like that. There's also some show jumping going on, and we'll see some of the top competitors and the driving as well. That's always quite exciting. So Olympia's running all week. There's so much going on there, and you'll be able to watch some of it live on FEI TV. And like I said, as well as the backstage stuff that I'll be doing, and the photos too. So I hope you've had a good week. I hope you're not too cold and suffering from the snow. I know there's snow in different parts of the country. I've been really lucky. I haven't had any yet, but the horses are having extra hay, and I have a feeling I might be getting some snow tonight. So I've tucked them up all warm because my horse lives out, as you know. And at times like this, I kind of wish he was stable because I feel so guilty. As long as he's got hay and his water isn't frozen over there, he'll be okay. So stay safe out there. If you have any problems, as always, you can use Horse Hour on Twitter and Facebook. If you do get stuck and need some hay or need a lift down to the horses or need a tractor to come and pick you up and get your car out, whatever it is, then the Horse Hour community are there to help you. So at Horse Hour on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. I hope you have a really lovely week with your horse, and I will speak to you from Olympia on Wednesday.
You've been listening to Horse Hour. Join the community on Twitter, Mondays, 8 p.m. UK time, 3 p.m. Eastern, by using the hashtag Horse Hour. Follow Amy at AmyStevenson1 and subscribe to us on Acast, iTunes, Stitcher and Player FM.
The Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.